Welcome to Blue Shift, brought to you by NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. I'm Maggie Massetti. This is part two of our interview with space artist Ron Miller. He's an author, illustrator, consultant, and former art director for the National Air and Space Museum's Albert Einstein Planetarium. In part one of our interview, we learned about Ron's art training and his philosophies on space art. He compared it to the Hudson River School, as well as how he translates science into a visual medium. In part two, we learn more about his job at Air and Space and discuss specific pieces of Ron's work. You'll definitely want to check out our website, universe.nasa.gov/blueshift, because that's where we've posted the pieces of art we talk about during the podcast. You've published books and worked on movies. How has your artwork for specific science releases or discoveries come about? Do scientists contact you looking for an artist conception, or do you get inspired and contact them?
Both. I try to keep my little catalog of new things up to date. So if I see something in the news and I think, whoa, that'd be a pretty picture, I'll sit down and do it. You know, I'll share it amongst my friends or show it to some of the magazine editors I work with sometimes. And other times people approach me because I have an article in a magazine that in the illustration for sort of 50-50.
One of my college friends discovered this exoplanet system, which is really kind of cool and unusual because it has what they think are rings. And then there was an article that had your art in it. So I was kind of curious how that came about.
I did the illustration itself specifically for the Journey to the Exoplanets iPad app I did a year ago through Scientific American. I did about 100 illustrations of various exoplanets. I tried to pick ones that were different. You've seen one Super Jupiter. You've pretty much seen them all. There's any point in doing every Super Jupiter there was. Maybe you picked out two or three that, you know, had some interesting qualities to them. So I looked for exoplanets that or systems that were unusual, something different, something that set them apart. So people could see the variety of planets that are being discovered out there. Your friends just turned out to be one of the ones I thought was cool.
He actually presented it at an American Astronomical Society meeting a year ago, where this panel was all about weird exoplanet systems. So it was really fascinating to hear about the things that you wouldn't expect to see. But apparently, if it's physically possible, it's probably out there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. They've discovered some really, really weird places. And I think they've just given up trying to predict what's likely or possible.
What are some of your favorite things to illustrate?
Planets. Easier to tell you what I don't, at least in space.
Sure.
I don't like doing hardware. I'm terrible at doing spacecraft. And not that I don't like spaceships. My studio here is filled with old plastic model kits from the 50s and 60s of spaceships. But I'm not very good at illustrating them. So that's one thing I try to avoid at all costs. There are people who do that much better than I do. Plus, in fact, I'm more interested in where we're going than how we get there. I seldom put spacecraft or even astronauts in the illustrations. Usually, I'll do it if for scale. There'll be a little person somewhere, largely to get across the idea of just how big a place is. But rather than being the subject itself, kind of like some of these old painters I told you about from Hudson River School, there'd be a pioneer in a corner or an elk or something, largely just to make the scene look bigger.
What's something you'd like to illustrate but haven't yet?
Whatever the next job being offered is. I like science fiction. I would love to illustrate more Jules Verne than I have. He's my favorite science fiction writer. I would like to illustrate a collection of Edgar Allan Poe, all of Robert Heinlein's juvenile novels.
I love his juveniles.
Me too. I would love to have a chance maybe to do the covers for a set of those, for instance. This is one of those questions, you know, I will be lay awake all night thinking of better answers to it.
Well, if you come up with more answers, we can always put them in the blog
post.
That's
right. You just shoot us an email.
We'll say, update, Ron emailed us and let us know that the secret was the Twilight novels. Or
I don't think so. But
one of the things that's interesting, this is Sarah, by the way,
Hello.
The other voice. Maggie's been asking questions so far. The National Air and Space Museum downtown last year, I believe, year before last, had a space art exhibit. So it was the big space art collection that NASA and Air and Space Museum had been curating and collecting for all these years. Did you go see that?
No,
is this a collection you're
moved,
familiar with?
Down where we're at now, it put us like 3 hours further from D.C. than we already were living. It makes it harder to get to D.C.
Yeah,
anymore.
Sure, it does.
Yeah, we had covered some of that because we were interested in it. And I luckily could go down there, and Tom Crouch took us around the exhibit and showed us what they had, and it was amazing.
Oh, Tom has been very, very good about sort of taking over the art collection at the museum and maintaining it. He's done a wonderful job.
What was your favorite thing about working at the Air and Space Museum?
What wasn't to like? I mean, I got to poke into every nook and corner of the place. I got a picture of myself in the X-15.
Oh, my gosh, man. That's so cool.
No kidding. What wasn't to like about being Air and Space Museum?
Yeah, no, I...
Yeah, that's amazing.
I like rockets, and the place was filled with real ones. So
you sent us a selection of some of the art you've worked on, all of which are beautiful and just absolutely inspiring, which is what I love about space art, because I agree it really lets us see things that otherwise can't be seen through data. But in both of the ones that I'm looking at right now, you know, they're rocky landscapes with these really inspiring skies. And the thing that really struck me about especially the sky view was, in a sense, how realistic it was, how much it looks like Hubble data. Do you stare at hours of what Hubble and Chandra and Spitzer and all of these satellites are sending down?
Not so much.
Okay.
Partly because largely what Hubble is, you know, the deep space stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice picture in its own right. For me to do a picture of what a Hubble does would be redundant. So I'm more interested, in the exoplanets, the planetary landscapes, Mars and places in our own solar system, other solar systems. And there's less coming from Hubble and such for things like that.
Well, mostly my point was just like, so I'm looking at one that, and it's this beautiful planetary landscape, and what you've got up in the night sky there is this really brilliant nebula, or
it's a remnant
in the background.
It's that the planet's star has exploded and thrown it out of its solar system.
And it really just
struck me explosion. I just made that up.
Whereas it looks real. I was going to say, it looks so much like the data that we look at, that it was like, you know, how much of that have you looked at to see those things?
I look at planetary nebula to kind of get a feeling of like the anatomy to them.
It just struck me that if I cropped out the planetary landscape below it, I bet I could sell it to scientists here in our building as Hubble data.
You're driving crazy trying to figure out what nebula that was.
What is that?
I just made it up.
They'd say it was probably too low res for them to figure out what they were looking at, which one it was.
It looks like the cat's eye.
Yeah,
but it looks a lot like the cat's eye.
It's beautiful, though.
But the same thing, you've got one here that's a pulsar planet, and the pulsar, I recognize, is a pretty common artist conception of what we think the anatomy looks like, but what's behind it, again, is just
the nebulae
and the clouds, and it just struck me again.
You should try this out sometime and see if it happens.
I feel like it's a social experiment. That
back to the pulsar planet image, is this the one of the first exoplanet discoveries was a pulsar planet system? Uh-huh. Is that what this was inspired by?
I think it was, yes. I think it was supposed to have been specifically that one, I think. That was one of my earlier ones, so that's probably was it.
Yeah, because Alex Fulshan, he was at Penn State when I was there. He was a professor I had, and he was the one who discovered the pulsar planets. And that was, amazing to look back and think that we didn't know of any exoplanets, and then there was that one weird system, and now all of a sudden there's like thousands of them, and how far we've come in such a short time.
I know amateur astronomers are discovering the things now.
These days, exoplanet discoveries feel cheaper and cheaper because they happen so continuously. You have to kind of one-up the next person. So my system is bigger, it has more Earth-like planets, better habitable zone, it's weirder.
Well, that's kind of what it's about. Like you said, you've seen one super Jupiter, you've seen them all. Like, we know they exist now, and they're probably all over the place, but what else is out there? I think that's kind of exciting, that finding what else is possible, or, you know, obviously a lot of people really want to find an Earth-like planet, or something that's habitable.
In some ways, that makes it a little less interesting because, you know, the Earth-like planet landscape, it'll kind of look like Earth.
So that's right.
It's the weirder ones that are fun to illustrate.
I'm sure.
The more Earth-like they get, the more Earth-like the landscapes get. Why end up doing something that's indistinguishable, you know, from Southern California?
Regular landscape.
Well, again, I think you'd have that thing where you fooled people and like, but surprise!
Actually, it'd be kind of cool to see an Earth-like landscape, but then something really weird in the sky, like a weird star system or nebula.
That's where those twin suns go.
Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we thought you'd also have fun with this. Several years ago, James Webb funded a project called Worlds Beyond, and the goal of this project was to have students, children, various groups basically imagine what they thought different exoplanets might be like. And they painted these sort of long poles that had a glowing light up top that represented the planet that they were working on. And they really ran the whole gamut from pretty realistic things. And of course, they were painting a pole. But then there were some that I just thought, well, these are kids who wanted magma. So they were going to get magma, going to have water, even regardless if it couldn't have water. I think that's really what always inspires me with good scientific visualization and good science art, is really that line between accuracy and just pure imagination. The action in some of the paintings you've done, it's not flat. It's very active and yeah. lively. And, you know, you imagine the magma of a crackling surface or something fiery exploding in the sky. We've also done this on a smaller scale with kids, where we hand them a piece of paper and say, imagine a planet. And so I am waiting for the discovery of Planet Wiggly, which I believe is made entirely of yellow jello. This is what one child presented to me. So
I have to Planet Wiggly now myself, I think. I like that.
And then someone else had Planet Llama that was shaped like a llama and occupied entirely by llamas. So when we talk about how, if we can imagine it and it's physically possible, it'll be out there, I'm a little afraid of when we discover the jello planet or the diamond chrysalis planet or whatever. These children were fantastically imaginative.
Well, so far, pretty much anything you could possibly imagine is actually turning up to be real.
Yeah, Planet Yellow Jello, telling you. 2013.
I know Planet Wiggly might be out there for all you know. I kind of hope so.
Are you working anything now that you could tell us about?
The most recent space thing I did was a picture of, even though I hate doing hardware, it was a picture of Curiosity on Mars for Discover magazine. I'm trying to think about anything exoplanety. About a month, I think. Oh, no, I take it back. I did a picture of the Diamond World, whatever it's called. I can never remember the names of these places because they all sound like...
they're all long strings of numbers.
Yeah, I know. They all sound like, you know, these chemical names. The magazine wanted an illustration of the surface of whichever planet that was. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, mostly a carbon and graphite on its surface. So mm-hmm. I did that.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. It was really fun talking to you. Well, and your art is amazing.
It really is.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Now I wonder how much of it I've seen without ever knowing who it was you, credited yeah. to. Yeah.
All the good stuff. That's mine.
That's right. The rest of it.
That's how you can tell the difference.
Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you so much.
I enjoyed this very much.
Thanks to Ron, and thanks to you also for joining us. If you want to check out the art discussed here, it's available on our website, which was universe.nasa.gov/blueshift. You can also check out our other blogs and podcasts there. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook, where we're NASA Blueshift, all one word. Send us your questions, tell us what you think, and even what you'd like to hear more about. I'm Maggie Massetti, bringing the universe closer to you with Blueshift.